Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Happy New Year to you all, and welcome to the first of the Hellenic Observatory's fortnightly research seminars for 2016. And it gives me great pleasure that our first speaker for this term's events is Dr. Dimitris Trandafilou, who's an old colleague and a very good friend, who at one point was also a fellow in the Hellenic Observatory at the LSE, so he knows the inside and outside of how this place works.
It was a long time ago.
It's a long time ago, but things haven't changed that much, Dimitris. Dimitris is currently the director of the Center for International and European Studies at Kadir Has University in Istanbul and chair of the Department of International Relations. Dimitris received his degrees, his undergraduate degree from the University of California at Berkeley, and subsequently did his graduate studies at the Fletcher School of Law and Diplomacy at Tufts University. Apart from being a research fellow at the LSE, he's also been a fellow and held management positions as well at a variety of different places, including at ELIAMEP, which I think will be known to most of you in this room, the Hellenic Foundation for European Foreign Policy. He was for a long time at the EU Institute for Security Studies in Paris. He was at the International Center for Black Sea Studies. He taught at the University of the Aegean. He's on a number of editorial boards and management boards of various institutions, which I don't have time to go into. He's well-traveled, he's well-known, and he is well-respected in his particular field. And today he is here to speak to us on the topic of how do Greek foreign policy elites perceive Turkey, findings from an empirical research project. And this was a research project which was funded by the National Bank of Greece under the tutelage of the Hellenic Observatory. So this is a double reason to welcome you here today, Dimitri. The floor is yours.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Spiros, for the welcome. Happy New Year to you all as well. Glad to be here. And let me sort of launch into this, what I'll be talking to you about. So it's how Greek foreign policy elites perceive Turkey, findings from an empirical research study. And Professor Economizis mentioned, this is part of a research project that was conducted by myself and a colleague of mine, Professor Kostas Ifandis, who is also at Kadir Has University and the University of Athens. And the project was then titled National Rule in Foreign Policy, a Descriptive Study of Greek Elite Perceptions Towards Turkey. And we also had the assistance, a research assistant, who is now a professor to an assistant professor at the University of Zirve, in Gaziantep, Andreas Kotelis. So basically three Greeks based in Turkey, or two based full-time and one part-time, sat down to try to understand how Greek foreign policy elites see Turkey. The whole study is on the Hellenic Observatory website, and since then we've also published a paper, this Greek SE paper is number 94 in August 2015, which in part describes the study, and the study has also been presented at Zirve University in Istanbul in an event that my center did together with the Friedrich Naumann Stiftung. There's a chance that there'll be a follow-up event in Athens where we'll present the results as well. And currently, I just received a grant from my university, and I'm conducting a study with a Turkish colleague on trying to examine Turkish foreign policy elites' opinion regarding Greece, right? I mean, it may sort of make sense that we should be doing this. So the purpose was basically, to sort of examine whether Greek elites have reevaluated their conceptions regarding the goals, the limitations, and prospects of Greek foreign policy at a time of crisis. And actually, it's not, regarding the post-crisis Greek state's position, actually the crisis, the Greek state's position. We're still in crisis among its neighbors and the international community in general. So has the crisis affected foreign policy? Basically, that's it. And there, a big part of the study had to do with how we view the elite view Turkey. The aim was twofold, to clarify the national role conceptions of the Greek political elite, of the Greek elite, and I'll explain the categories of elite and how we did that, to assess the power of the national role conceptions variable, to explain whether the financial crisis had an impact on foreign policy making. And the interesting thing, we're talking about a period where Greece is in crisis, Greece's role is being downgraded at a time when Turkey's role was in accession. Whether it still is or not is a question to ponder because of events over the last year. But this is sort of the two periods: Turkey as a growing middle power in the region, and Greece as a weak and European power or EU member state. So what we did was we addressed six categories of elites. We assumed that there are elites that either take decisions or influence decisions, and we started identifying them, right? So political elite, military elite, diplomatic elite, academic elite, media elite, and business elite. And again, here sort of tells you, you know, the business elite, members of the Hellenic Federation of Enterprises primarily, the media elite, journalists, or the diplomatic correspondents we went to, senior editors, commentators in major dailies, TV and radio stations, and so on. Diplomats, basically ambassadorial level people, directorate heads and deputy heads and other very senior embassy personnel, ambassadors, and so on. Military officers, brigadier generals and up, whether currently in service or retired. Politicians, in particular, those that are members of, at the time we did the study, of the Defense and Foreign Affairs Committee and the European Affairs Committee, but as well as all parliamentarians, and then academics, IR and politics, EU studies, faculty members in Greek universities. We prepared a survey for them, a closed-ended survey, and this was sort of the results. We had about a 41% response rate, and this is sort of the questionnaires that we sent out, the responses. We were very lucky to have Kappa Research, which is a big polling firm in Greece, that worked with us in hosting on their server and assessing a lot of the, analyzing the results for us and ensuring the integrity of the survey. Even though initially in our proposals we had also suggested that we would be conducting interviews with a number of key policymakers, we gave that up on that idea because we realized that they were not willing to talk. We reached out to foreign ministers and others and former foreign ministers, and everybody did not want to talk on record. One of the persons we spoke to was a former foreign minister. She was willing to talk, everyone understands who, but again, did not want to have us sort of quote her. Another foreign minister, as his usual tactic, he made an appointment with us and then canceled the last minute, you know, things like that. So we decided, you know, we're going to go, and there was a need among the elites, especially the political elites, for anonymity, and we would focus on a closed-ended survey. And so there were three sets of closed-ended questions dealing with Greece's role in the international arena, its influence on the international system, and in general questions about Greek foreign policy, how they view it. The second question, a set of questions had to do with Turkish foreign policy and Turkey, and then the third set, Greek-Turkish relations. And I will not be talking to you about every single one of these questions, the 33 questions and so on. I will focus on some of them that have a relevance for some of the conclusions I want to draw, and maybe we can have a discussion. And in particular, with reference to Turkey. So let's start question 20. Right. If the respondents were asked if they approve, I've misspelled it here. I did not write it properly. If they approve the rapprochement strategy that has been in place since 1999, and very interestingly enough, the results show that there is high agreement for the rapprochement process across the six categories of elites. Almost 63.5%, and this is the first time we have hard data of this type. Yes, 63.5% support the rapprochement process, right? Agree. On the other hand, it is true that a high percentage disagreed. The highest agreement was among the academics, 81%. The politicians second, 76%. Diplomats third, 73%. And of course, the outlier throughout the survey were the military. Basically disagreed with the rapprochement process. The numbers were negative. It was the only category with negative numbers. Another important question is how the respondents were asked to identify the state of current relations with Greece and Turkey, and most of them basically said they were neither good nor bad, right? So there is a rapprochement process, support for the process has been around since 1999, but relations are okay, right? Which is not bad, that they are okay, neither good nor bad. And again, this trend is, so 47%, right, is spread evenly across the groups, except for the academics, where about 51% of them thought that relations were rather good. And of course, regarding this question, it's also important to note that most of the respondents refrain from characterizing Greek-Turkish relations as either good or bad. So the answers tend to coalesce towards the center, right? The extremes are sort of out of the equation. Another question, which is very important too, I mean, yes, support for the rapprochement process, but is there support for the strategy, the Greek strategy over the last few years, in support of Turkey's accession process, right? And here, basically, we had a positive number, lower than the 63.5% in favor of rapprochement. About 51.6% of those surveyed said they support the strategy of supporting Turkey's efforts to become a full member of the European Union. And in a way, this is what Greek strategy towards Turkey is predicated upon, this, the Europeanization of Turkey. And I'll talk at the end whether this is good or bad, given today's circumstances. Again, here the military officers tended to answer negatively, as opposed to the other categories that were much more even in terms of the responses.
So you need to note, is this a question about whether you agree with the principle of supporting
yes,
that,
yes,
or if you approve the efforts, maybe, how you evaluate the efforts?
No, whether you approve with the principle, basically. Now, this is the question which we should be looking at. Trust, right? Can Greece trust Turkey? You see the numbers, right? 11.4% said yes, right? And I'm pretty sure when I do my other research study, it will be the same thing among Turkish elite regarding Greece. And this is something we need to talk about. So it's very interesting already, right? Relations are neither good or bad. Support for rapprochement process. Majority support for Turkey's accession bid, EU accession bid, but no trust at all, right? And that has not changed over time. Four of the six groups, no respondents replied that they totally agreed with the question's premise. So diplomats, politicians, journalists, and the military officers were quite negative on this issue. There were a few more positives among the academics and the business elite. But, you know, this is a very stark number in contrast to every other response. The next question, they were asked to assess whether Turkey's economic growth is beneficial to Greece or not. And here, those that agreed with the premise of the question were about 40%, 39.8%. I mean, this is interesting as a question. I think had we not been in crisis, the numbers might have been different. Because it's always an issue as to Turkey's economic growth. We'll get to another question in a second. But Turkey's economic growth, it might be beneficial. But let me get to the next question here. Is beneficial to Greece or not? 40% said yes. The next question was, if Turkey's economic development constitutes a threat for Greece, and here about 35% or 36% said it does. And so this shows that there's a threat perception, although not majoritarian, due to the rapid economic growth in Turkey. So yes, it's good that our neighboring country is growing, but the threat is that it's growing too fast, maybe, in contrast to us. And another question related to the economics, which is what I wanted to talk about before, was whether Turkish investments in Greece are a threat to Greek national interests. right? And where hence they should be obstructed. And about 61% said, no, they're not a threat. And this is where I meant, where I think this is the impact of the crisis, because had there not been a crisis, there's still a lot of discussion about Turkish investments and what Turkish companies, where they want to invest. Usually it's marinas, islands, and so on. And always, oh my goodness, the Turks are ready to take over islands. But it's very interesting that even though there is a threat perception regarding this, the threat perception is being reduced. It's okay, it's not so bad. And especially when you realize, I mean, because up to now, until this crisis, the trade, the investment was imbalanced in favor of Greece. So more Greek investments by banks and so on in Turkey proper than Turkish investments in Greece. Cyprus question. So they were asked how important the resolution of the Cyprus problem is for the involvement or for the improvement of Greek-Turkish relations. And here, if you add on the responses, right, 44% said extremely important, 30% very important, 21% rather important, which gives you a solid 92.2% that suggests that there is a direct correlation, which is interesting because I've always been someone who always was a partisan of decoupling the Cyprus issue from Greek-Turkish relations. But this shows how difficult decoupling is. But we can get to this at the end, right? Now, this is a question we asked whether they thought that there could be a crisis between Greece and Turkey during the next 5 years. And, basically across the board, the answers were rather unlikely, right? 40.6% thought it was rather improbable, 41% thought it was likely, but more or less most of them do not think there's going to be a crisis. But if we go to the next question, which is, should there be a crisis, where would it erupt? So we asked questions and focusing on four particular sets of issues. One was I have here, the Aegean issues in general, right? Delimitation, territorial waters, exclusive economic zones, etc. And we see that about 80.6% of the respondents thought that should there be a crisis, it would be over these issues. And then the next questions had to do where the other issue we put up was the issue of Thrace, which comes up as one of the issues in Greek-Turkish relations. The numbers there were 32%. That Thrace could, a bad turn in Thrace could lead to a crisis in Greek-Turkish relations. Cyprus, even though Cyprus is so crucial for the advancement of Greek-Turkish relations, on the other hand, in terms of threat perception, it's not like the Aegean, right? There's a 40.8% response that a hot crisis between Greece and Turkey could arise because of Cyprus. And lastly, we asked whether internal developments in Turkey could cause a future Greek-Turkish crisis. And here the numbers were about 69%. Right? Always a correlation that whenever something is happening in Turkey, over the years, over the decades, there's a direct correlation or impact on Greek-Turkish relations. In principle, the logic in Greece is that it's always less likely to go to war with Greece than any of the other neighbors, so you can sort of provoke a crisis and not necessarily let it get out of hand as it might get out of hand with Iraq, Syria, whoever else is around. Now, the final question we asked had to do with, we asked them to indicate which of the four aforementioned issues is the most likely to cause a future crisis. We asked them separately, then we asked them together, and again, the answer was here, the Aegean issues, 60%, the Turkish internal crisis, 30%, 29%, while relatively low, if you put them together, regarding Thrace and Cyprus. Now, these are the questions I want to talk about today. And so if we assess the responses, and Kostas and I have spent quite a bit of time trying to assess this. I mean, you know, assessment is a bit difficult too, because as I showed at the beginning, the study was delivered in November 2014, which meant the responses were collected in a period between May and October 2014. And even though it's not that long ago, there has been a turn of events in terms, in particular, in terms of Turkey's role, and also a continuing turn of events in Greece. And I'll get to this in a second. But if we look at some of the assumptions we can make in terms of some of the results, first is what I told you previously regarding the post-1999 rapprochement strategy. I mean, from what we can best gather, this is the first time that we have hard data supporting this, we call it landmark change in Greece's foreign policy approach towards Turkey, and so therefore support among the elite, right? The second is that, again, there's about a 15-16% point drop, still majoritarian support for Turkey's EU bid, but still a drop. about 50% regarding it. This, so their opinion more or less fluctuates, and the third conclusion that one can make, it has to do with the issue of trust, and it's a revealing issue. Trust. Has to do with perceptions, undeniably, and how it's because it's, we're looking at how elites perceive Turkey and what's going on there. But when we look at the results, the undeniable assumption is that the Greek elites strongly agree that Turkey is not to be trusted. Now, this is not just a Greek-Turkish issue. It happens among neighbors everywhere else in the world and historically and so on. But the fact that the Greek elites think Turkey cannot be trusted in high percentages across elite groups, to us, was rather surprising, especially given the more moderate assessment of relations between the two countries in the previous questions. Additionally, the answers to the question concerning trusts are contradictory when compared to the answers to questions concerning addressing the perception of threat from Turkey. So when we look at the questions that had to do with economics, right, Turkey's economic development, interest in Turkish investments in Greece, and so on, where the results are more mitigated, more balanced, we're trying to find, it's a bit difficult to sort of understand as to why trust levels should be that low. But I will talk about this at the end of my presentation. Although trust is low, on the other hand, we should also keep in mind that more or less in this five-year horizon, the expectations are that the crisis will not break out. And finally, we should emphasize the Cyprus issue. The vast majority, more than 70%, it's more 80%, and then if I include it's 90%, not 70 as I put up there, of the elites consider Cyprus a problem. The Cyprus problem is a prerequisite for the improvement of Greek-Turkish relations. And it shows a strong attachment to the roots of the conflict, as historically Cyprus has been the catalyst of crises, of Greek-Turkish crises, on many occasions. And these answers may also provide an idea of where the Greek elites think that the Greek foreign policy and the decision-making elites should focus if the goal is to normalize relations with Turkey. So normalization is not possible without resolving the Cyprus issue so far. And this becomes even more relevant given what is happening on the island proper. Because over the course of also the rapprochement process, we know that no outstanding difference has been resolved. You know, so we're sort of on a holding sort of pattern, right? We have talks among the envoys of the two foreign ministries, over 55, 56 rounds.
They've probably found, have blueprints for a solution, but we don't even know what these are, and no single issue has been resolved. So we might be moving to the resolution of one issue, and this might have an impact ultimately on Greek-Turkish relations. Now, quickly, I was debating whether to put these slides or not, but some assumptions across elite groups. So when it came to comes to the diplomats, the diplomats are rather consistent in their responses. The vast majority consider the rapprochement process the right strategy. It is split, just like overall the elites, on whether we should steadily support Turkey's accession bid to the EU. Most agree that relations are neither good or bad, while none of them describe the relations between the countries as bad. So that means that there is a process, consensus in the foreign ministry proper as to where relations are and should be. And this is one of the also groups, but like all the other groups, that consider that Turkey could not be trusted. The military elite, the outliers the six categories of elites, is the only group that disagrees on majority with the rapprochement strategy. Obviously, the group that does not support Turkey's EU accession efforts. A vast percentage, and this is totally disagree. I mean, the number is actually even higher if I put the different categories where the questions asked. Totally disagree with the statement that we should trust Turkey, and they are the ones that are clearly do not support Turkey's economic growth. They feel it's not beneficial to Greece. The political elites, very similar in responses to the answers given by the diplomats on the trust issue. Okay, Turkey is not to be trusted, while the threat perception stemming from Turkey is deemed as moderate. Most politicians agree with Turkey's accession to the EU, although there is about 36% of them that disagree. Finally, just like most of the other groups, should a crisis break out, it would be over Aegean issues, and this is sort of their assessment. The media elites, interestingly enough, strongly support the rapprochement process, with the answers being given similar to all the other groups in terms of relations being neither good nor bad. After the academics, it's the second largest group supporting Turkey's EU accession bid, and but again, very reluctant on the trust issue. Low threat perception compared to the other groups, and again, they also consider that the Aegean would be the issue, or one of the Aegean issues that would could lead to a crisis. The business elite basically concur with the rapprochement strategy, even though their 60% rate is actually the second lowest after that of the military elites. It is important to note that Turkish direct investments are not considered a threat by this group. It makes sense. And they consider a possible Greek-Turkish crisis rather unlikely. Well, again, for them, the Aegean would be the place where it would be held. The academic elites, it seems to be the one that's more favorable towards the process of rapprochement and the improvement in Greek-Turkish relations, positive about the state of affairs, close to three out of four consider that Greece should continue Turkey's accession bid, EU accession bid, and again, does not consider a crisis as a very likely development, and again thinks that out of the four options, Aegean, Thrace, Cyprus, an internal crisis in Turkey, the Aegean would be the most likely cause should we go there. So what does all of this mean? And, you know, every time I look at the study, it's also given, it's based a little bit on the circumstances. My answers slightly differ, and when Kostas and I sit down and talk about them. But more or less, and I'll give you my idea, my conclusions as to what this means. All right, so we have high support for the rapprochement process, support for the accession bid. Relations are okay, neither good nor bad. Okay. The fourth issue there is something I wrote, but then I did not give you the slide, because at the time,
The perception was also, we were talking whether Turkey is democratizing or not. It's not, but anyway, let's leave that aside. We have the relevance of the Cyprus issue and the low perception of trust, of crisis between Greece and Turkey over the next 5 years. So, and again, conclusions, Aegean issues dominate over any other crisis, possibly. Issue of trust, or lack thereof. Now, when we start thinking about the issue of trust, it makes me wonder, why? And then I start thinking a little bit about the whole process of rapprochement. We call it rapprochement. Is it? Or is rapprochement a misnomer? And I'm starting to believe that it is a misnomer. It's a process that's not even institutionalized. It's a political process. It's a political process. It's not, when you sit down and study rapprochement and you look at the example, which is the Franco-German rapprochement process, which is institutionalized, where there is an effort made to educate the other sides and younger generations. Here, I've never heard of the Greek government offering, say, 1,000 scholarships every year for Turkish students, or the Turkish government doing the same thing for Greek students. There's nothing of that. It is a totally political process that has been kept alive by the elites on both sides since it started. It has evolved over time, right? Because when it started in 99, everyone makes reference to Papandreou and Jem as foreign ministers at the time, with an emphasis on civil societies and societies getting together. That has slowly died away, to the point now that whenever we have these high-level political meetings, cooperation councils between the governments of the two sides, where half the cabinets of each other's sides either meet in Athens or somewhere in Turkey, you sort of know already what the joint statement will be. It's about the objective that in the next 5 years our trade and investment levels will grow by whatever percentage and reach that number. No one talks about civil society anymore, right? It's about business. Fine, yes, you need the business interaction. But there is nothing really set down. No one is sitting down to talk about really the objective. What was the end result of Franco-German rapprochement, which is still ongoing? The Treaty of Élysée in 63, the Treaty of Friendship and Cooperation, right? Which was reaffirmed 40 years later, which meant that Chirac, at the time in 2003, even symbolically, attended a European Council meeting as a representative of France and Germany. In another meeting, Gerald Schroeder attended another meeting as a representative of Germany and France. Right? We don't have anything like this. We have goodwill on both sides since 99, and 99 is important because it is a period that that correlates with the Greek strategy in favor of Turkish accession to the EU. Right? If you can't beat them, let's try to make them more like a bit like us, right? And that's it. So, and I think the lack of... And we also know that even though we're in the process of rapprochement and there's greater interaction, right? So I always say when I'm asked in interviews, especially Turks want to know, I am a product of the rapprochement process. Had there not been, I would not find myself for the last 5 years or so in Turkey, teaching at a Turkish university, right? And many others that go. But I also feel many times that should a crisis break out, I could be out of there, just like that, just as our relations have historically been, right? So maybe the... And we also know that this period of rapprochement since 99, so what is it, 16, 17 years now, as I said before, no issue has basically been resolved. No major issue, outstanding issue, has actually been resolved between the two countries. Even putting Cyprus aside, the bilateral issues that could complicate. And we also know, by the way, that new issues are coming on the table. You are Agelos Chrysoyelos, right?
Yes.
No, it is you. Okay, so you just wrote that thing on the blog, and one of my slides talked about the refugee issue, which comes in. So the lack of trust, I think, is explained by that, right? The fact that we have a process of rapprochement, There is greater interaction, but even that interaction is limited. I could give you tons of examples, but there is no particular institutional framework. And we just have to keep this in mind. And so far, we have been blessed by the fact that successive Greek and Turkish governments have kept the process alive. Have kept it alive because they deem it to be in their country's national interest to keep it alive. The Cyprus issue. Well, yes, I told you I've always been sort of in favor of decoupling. But obviously the numbers show. If I remember, over the last 10-15 years, the only prime minister that at the beginning of his term talked a little bit about decoupling was Kostas Karamanlis. And that was very briefly at the beginning of his term. You even had a couple of articles, I remember reading something in Tovima, maybe another newspaper, that there were thoughts in the foreign ministry about this, and they died away very soon. Probably looking at poll numbers and whatever, he was getting evidence that there's no way one can do this. But now Cyprus becomes important and relevant because should there be a resolution, which means a substantive changing mindset on the part of Greek elites, in particular Turkish elites, because Ankara still has not spoken regarding the process. It would be the first example of actually a resolution of an issue, even if it's not a direct state-to-state Greek-Turkish issue. It would be the first example we actually have should the Cypriot elites be allowed to reach, and we have enlightened elites in Cyprus right now, should they be allowed to reach some sort of compromise, right? Then, other factors, X factors I put down there. Public opinion. Yeah, because we looked at elite opinion, and because primarily our assessment is that less so in the Greek case, it's going to be more so in the Turkish case, but, we are still a society that's pretty much... things run, from the top down, right? The civil society element is not all that powerful. Even though the process started on the premise of nurturing, actually was the top nurturing the bottom, get together and interact. And now the top is not saying that anymore and the bottom is not interacting as much as it should, right? And so this could be good. I mean, if the elites are sort of coming to terms with the fact that relations are neither good or bad, the rapprochement is okay, and so on, it means that you can sort of guide your public opinion towards that direction. But we still are not very clear about public opinion, which a public opinion of a country like Greece, which is in crisis for so long, that feels tired. And then if you link this to the second issue that I put there, growing exceptionalisms, is complicated, gets even more complicated. What I mean by growing exceptionalisms, in the Greek case, it's, at least in my interpretation, what has been happening in Greece over the last year or so, where many have felt that part of their identity has been threatened, right? Their identity is you're a Greek and you're also European, and you try to take the European part away from you, as opposed to others that... sort of promote just the Greek aspect of identity. And we've seen the Greek foreign ministry and the current Greek government loosening the links, loosening the bonds because of circumstance, because of perceptions, because of policy with its home, with Europe, with the EU. And so as you loosen the bonds, you start to develop another discourse as to who you are, as to where you want your country to go, right? And we've had a number of examples. I remember 2-3 months ago, I was at a big conference in Bucharest, and one of the speakers was newly appointed since April, the Secretary General for International Economic Relations of the Greek Foreign Ministry. His last name is Tsipras, I think, also. And who was embarrassing when he spoke. But what has he done? Because what he has done has been in the news. He's taken two major trips, right? Two major trips since he's become Secretary General. One of them was to Iran, and that was before the referendum. And the second, a week-long trip, at the time when there were stories in the press about maybe the Iranians helping us out. Now the Iranians have asked us to pay a bill, right, for those that follow Greek foreign policy. And the second trip after the elections, the July, was to Venezuela for a week. Right? So it sort of tells you, so if this is, and I can say many other examples anyway, but all I'm saying is I think there's a growing attempt at some sort of exceptionalism if Brexit becomes a reality. If it's in the interest of the government or the policymakers so that they stay in power or they think this is the best course for the country. Exceptionalism is actually happening in Turkey's side as well. More and more so, right? More and more so. Growing exceptionalism. And it's very interesting also if we think about the geography where we are now. I mean, you can see the Turkish exceptionalism developing, very much linked to the third issue about Europe, and I'll get to this in a second. You have a Russian exceptionalism, and as I really think we have our own small sort of development of an exceptionalism as Greece. And this is where the issue of Turkey's accession bid comes in. There is support still, 51% in favor of, and this is still the official policy of Greece, we support Turkey's accession, right, in that Google influenced them, and therefore, yes, we pretend we don't like, but we actually probably agree that we need to open more chapters and therefore bind them into the EU decision-making processes, norms and values and so on. On the other hand, we also know that there's a growing realization that the relationship between Ankara and Brussels is loosening the bonds even further. It's not about Turkish accession anymore. It's about some sort of strategic partnership, right? Whether it's a summit on the refugee issues and many other issues. So the strategic partnership, which was a taboo expression in Turkey, is becoming a mainstream expression, cultivated both by many European member states and the Turkish government itself, which also therefore means that, this is part and parcel of Turkey's exceptionalism as it tries to redefine its role as a middle power in its geographic space. Greek strategy is predicated upon this. But even the current Greek government seems to doubt the purpose or not of being an EU member state. So what does this mean for a Greek strategy? What does this mean in terms of Greek-Turkish relations? And given the fact, as I said, that we have not resolved any major difference. And then you can bring in new issues. And so I mentioned Agalos Christogoulos' blog spot, which I read, because it's true. The refugee issue does bring in further complications, right? Which, A, threaten what we consider as Greeks as to be our acquis as a member state, right? And so you are told every day that we might be kicked out of a Schengen or whatever else. Why? Because you have refugees coming, yes, from where? Turkey, which there's a growing realization it's not playing up its bid, its part, in terms of trying to keep them there, processing them, creating the centers that are supposed to be created and so on, right? It wasn't that long ago that we had the summit. So the interesting thing from all of this is that it is good. I mean, and this goes to the crux of the trust issue, the low trust of the elite and therefore public opinion regarding Turkey. It is good that you have numbers in favor of rapprochement, right? And still in favor of Turkey's EU accession bid. But should there not be movement anytime soon, I really fear that because we are both countries tend to, you know, it's always, in terms of Turkey, I always tell my Turkish colleagues, it's always sort of membership a la carte, the accession process a la carte, the membership to NATO a la carte, right? You need the alliance, you don't need the alliance, it's on, it's off. Both of our countries, what was it, not too long ago, in 2012, we were both celebrating our 60th year anniversary of entry into NATO, and both sides tried to hide the fact that we're NATO member states, right? We had one big event in Megaron Athens, Megaro, where the Secretary General came, got 2 minutes of television time, probably less, and one big event in Ankara, and actually the Prime Minister was sick at the time anyway, so Erdogan was not around, and he was replaced by Davutoglu, I can't remember who. And that was it, right? And so there's always this feeling of being a la carte, which one can understand. We are flank states, we are the margins, we feel... Greeks and Turks, when I say we now, right? Both countries feel that they're not respected by their allies and partners. And lack of understanding about the bilateral issues and which way they should be perceived. So ultimately, when the elite... what am I trying to say? Support. When the elite support the policies in place, but have serious doubts as to, because again, this is where the trust comes in, as to whether they should actually trust the other side. Given the fact that no issue of importance has actually been resolved, how long, the question that's raised, therefore, is how long can you keep this up, right? And I'll give you a personal example and I'll end with this. Because perceptions are interesting. Two examples. One is, you know, I've been going to Turkey since 2002. First time I went as a visitor, and then I've been going professionally, conferences, meetings, and other things. So in 2003, I was at the time at the EU Institute of Security Studies in Paris, and I was invited to an event organized by the German Marshall Fund, by the late Ron Asmus, in Istanbul. And my Spanish colleague was also invited, and Martin Ortega. He comes to my office in Paris and he goes, Dimitri, you know, do we need a visa to go to Turkey? I go, Martin, I don't need one, but you know, you should check. If you don't need one, you the Greek, I don't need one, me the Spaniard. I said, it doesn't work like that, but Martin doesn't look, you know, he thinks I'm just joking with him. So we both fly to Istanbul, we go through passport control, I tell Martin to go in first, and you know, he presents his passport and he's told, go get your visa. Martin is shocked. I'll wait for you here, you know. Martin gets his visa, comes back, we clear passport control. And then you clear passport control and there are these huge banners. And the banners are like Greek flags and Turkish flags. And this was the time when Greece and Turkey were bidding together for the European Football Championship. Right? Martin received his second shock. You know, he had visa shock, now the Greek flag. He turns to me and he goes, you guys, you Greeks have been joking with us, you Greeks and Turks, all these years. I said, no, we've always been interacting, but we have not resolved anything. So there is that perception, and I think the Greeks have it too, the interaction. On the other hand, I also know, now at a time of greater mobility, right? So Greeks have been able to go for over a decade to Turkey without a visa, just by presenting their ID cards. Now, only last week, the Turkish authorities changed that and they want you to have the new IDs with the chips, which we still don't have in Greece. So people have to go with their passports. But still, you don't need a visa. And that's very important, right? But do they interact with Turks? I don't think they do. Yes, the Greeks have settled there. My friends are Turkish, I work with Turks, and so on. But the visitors, do they interact? When you walk down İstiklal Caddesi, the main thoroughfare in you know, the European side of Istanbul, and you hear our loud compatriots and what they say, it's a series of value judgments, which means that they've never spoken to a Turk. Likewise, Turks, more and more of them, end up coming to Greece. More and more of them because Greece tries to facilitate with visas and this, and you can go to the islands without a visa, and so on. And I remember once a friend of mine who had gone, and he had gone to the island of Mytilene. And he came back,
And then I saw him again, and I said, well, how was it? How was your trip? He said, it was great, but I don't understand you Greeks. Well, why? What's wrong? Hey, you know, you guys are in crisis, but your stores are closed on Sunday. And I said, well, you're an idiot, because that means you never spoke to a Greek to understand why stores are closed on Sunday. Because you're making a value judgment. You are judging my country on the basis of the fact that your supermarkets are open from 8 to 8, right? And the same person I see when I leave my office at 8 is there when I come back at 8 at night, right? But talk to understand why. So we have this sort of relationship, right, which is we are there, we like each other's countries. Few people there talk, interact, really try to understand the other. But that has been sort of the state of the relationship, and I think it's the same thing among elites, right? So the assumption is it's okay, we don't resolve, nothing breaks up, except sometimes we have, well, Imia was so long ago. It's all right, you know? They will never allow us for things to get out of hand. Isn't that what we say? They will never allow us. But I don't think fundamentally that this is a very sustainable effort, right? Because, again, we predicate, so younger generations make assumptions, therefore. Not the generations that started getting together in 99 or post-1999 because Papandreou and Jem and then their leaders were saying, get together. And I was thinking, it was a few years ago, when was Samaras, when he came as prime minister as part of this in 2012 or so on, and I think Mehmet Ali Birand, who was one of the great Turkish journalist, was very much involved in the rapprochement between the two countries, at least in getting journalists together. He had passed away. And on the day of Samaras's visit, I had written an article in Hurriyet Daily News, one of the English dailies in Turkey, and I had asked a rhetorical question. Well, who is the next Mehmet Ali Birand? There isn't one. So there might be more interaction, but it's like at cross purposes. You come to the country, you don't talk to me, you enjoy it, I come to your country, but I don't necessarily talk to you, right? So, yes, okay, but younger generations just assume that things have always been like this, and they have not. And I, when I think at times of how, at a moment's notice, I mean, we were thinking about it quite a bit during the Gezi protest, my colleague Kostas and I, and then a few other times when, you know, there seems to be tension with air flights, whatever, overflights and so on, how at a moment's notice, the government can just tell us to leave. Because there's nothing sustainable. And there's nothing institutionalized. There's nothing that, I mean, yes, there is a relationship that's been built over time. But as I said, it's based on, you know, both countries thinking that this is in their best interest. So this is where we are right now, right? And so you do have... And I think the focus should be, and I think one of the messages would be from this, and I think it would be at least a conclusion from the other study that I'm working on, how to restart, but not necessarily led from the top, the civil society to interact, the different groups to interact with each other, right? Because that's not happening.
Why don't you stop there?
I'll stop here. That was my last note. Yes.
Because some of these,
I'm making you nervous,
some of these issues, I'm sure, will come up in discussion as well. Thank you very much. We've got plenty of time to take questions and to have a discussion. There are lots of issues that have been raised by the study and by what Dimitris has shared with us this evening, both from the empirical data and also his personal thoughts on working and living in Turkey. So why don't we throw the discussion open to the floor and take whatever questions people have. Could you please, when asked a question, make it a question and also identify yourselves for the benefit of our speakers so we know who you are. The gentleman at the back, please.
Oh, okay. I know something about Greeks because my parents came from Anatolia in 22. And I note that you, Dimitri, you didn't look at... religious opinion. The religious elites surely have a big government impact in relationships.
Mm-hmm. Do you want to take one question? Or
if yes, how you want. Let's take a couple more questions and ask them, Dimitris to answer them together. Angelos, and then the gentleman in front of you. Please identify yourself, Aguilar.
Yeah, well,
the author of the blog.
The author of the by now infamous blog, yeah. I'm the National Bank of Greece postdoctoral fellow here at the observatory. I have two questions. One probably very much directed at the research, the other one is more open-ended or broader. Concerning the political elites, I wonder if you could talk a bit about if there were any patterns related to party allegiance, so if you saw any difference in the responses depending on which parties or ideologies the respondents represented. And the second one is actually concerning the question of exceptionalism, and this opens up the whole question of Greek strategy towards Turkey. It used to be that we thought that Greek foreign policy being nationalistic towards Turkey was exceptional in a broader context of European foreign policy that was more cooperative or humanistic, or at least those were supposed to be its values. Now, I wonder to what extent what you have presented here actually makes Greece quite exceptional in the context of a EU that is not interested in enlargement whatsoever, and any more so is not interested in enlargement towards Turkey. So to what extent are we now, have we shifted positions from where we were 20 years ago, but we're still very much exceptional within the EU still?
Okay, let's take those two questions, and then we'll come back to the other people who want to ask you a question. The question of religion.
We did not think that. I mean, you know, yes, the church has influence, but then there are quite a few of the political elite and the other elites that express those views as well, and we just did not think that. We had to sort of restrict the elite categories. But as I said, yeah, particularly when it comes to the political elite, the military elite, and a few others, it's a cross-segment of society, and a lot of them do have those values and ideas. A lot of them do come from Istanbul or elsewhere in Turkey, and their families. So that's why we did not look at it. Okay, party affiliation. Again, it's something I have to look at again, because we did not necessarily focus on that. But I think we assume that again, this is not the current parliament, right? This is the parliament in 2014. So basically, it was still a time when it's true when. Most of those responding come from parties that were in favor of the Europeanization process or rapprochement process because it was what they identified themselves with. But we have not looked into it further. It's something I should look into.
But if I could just interrupt, yeah. It's an interesting point. How did you choose who you're going to send the questionnaires to, on the one hand, in terms of this political elite that you're talking to? Mm-hmm. And can you share any indication with us who was it that responded? Mm. Just so we can have some kind of idea of the representation. We appreciate it's a different parliament, but nonetheless, it would be interesting to have some kind of idea who the who was polled and who the response came from.
No, who responded? No, because anonymity was important in that sense. Who was polled were members of parliament, and then we made an extra, a big effort, as I said, to reach out in particular to the parliamentarians in the two committees that are more relevant. But we reached out to members of parliament. Right, and then we tried through the Secretary General of the Parliament and others to make sure that they would respond. Right, but we did not know because anonymity was important, and so we know who we sent those questionnaires out to. We do not know who responded from that sample. Right?
Would you know at least what party they were from? I mean, they would still answer anonymously.
No. Because that was not a question there. Because the first question was, which category? Are you, yeah. Right? Do you represent? That's it, right? And that's how we know what categories, because they identify themselves on that basis, right? Mm-hmm. But we have a list of who we send it to.
Okay.
Now, your second question had to do with a change. Can you repeat it?
Exceptionalism.
Yeah.
Well, we were exceptional having a nationalistic foreign policy in the 90s. Are we exceptional now in Europe, thinking that there's a credible chance of Turkey entering the EU?
There was one point in time when Greece was, in a sense, the outlier in terms of the European Union, not accepting Turkey's European perspective, and that was considered to be part of Greek exceptionalism. Mm-hmm. Now the table has turned, there is enlargement fatigue, or whatever you want to call it, in which the European Union is not entertaining Turkish accession, and yet Greece's exceptionalism is such that it suggests we want Turkey to be part, become part of the European Union.
Yeah, because that, because Greece has run out of strategies. I mean, the thing is, I think that's where it is. We do not have another strategy other than the one that's been in place since 1999, which is, in varying degrees, which you know, both New Democracy and PASOK have supported. And this government has not really shown, yes, it has shown a willingness to reach out to Turkey, but this is still the Greek strategy. So we do not have anything else. So there we need to keep that from the Greek perspective. But the problem is of a growing Turkish exceptionalism, which is moving away from the European Union. And I think it's even wider, it's even bigger than that. There was a recent report by Whitehall, I think, that was just issued about where the UK would be in the next 20 years or so. And one of the conclusions is that the UK would just be just another one of the second-tier powers, even more so, in a world where there would be an ever-growing number of second-tier powers, right, in disharmony with each other. So the EU is made up of the second-tier powers, whether it's the UK or France or Germany, which are the big ones for us. But if we think our part of the world, we have Turkey. We have, not that far off, two other second-tier powers. It depends how you identify them as such, but they have influence. Iran and Saudi Arabia at odds with each other. You have Egypt. You have Turkey at odds right now with a great power that's slowly becoming something less than a great power, Russia. And we're becoming smaller and even more insignificant. And so our strategy really cannot change. I don't think we seem to have any alternatives. While we are also, or there seems to be in among our public, our political elite in particular, an attempt to develop another discourse should EA, the whole EU experiment fail, or should we be further marginalized within the EU, right? So that exceptionalism stems from that. I mean, that's at least how I see it, right? And that's where we actually need, therefore, that's why we need to reach out to resolve a couple of these issues, maybe with our neighbors. I remember, I'm a member of the Greek-Turkish Forum, so actually the Greek-Turkish Forum is meeting tomorrow in Cyprus, and I cannot be there. So it's a group, a close group of Greeks and Turks, and we have Greek Cypriots and Turkish Cypriots that debate and discuss, and if there are things that are interesting or of interest, we try to pass these on to our political authorities to help the process, you know, of rapprochement along and whatever, and discussion, and building trust. And it was in 2010, spring 2010, the year I think I moved, or 2009, to Turkey. We were meeting in Istanbul, and we were told by our Turkish colleagues, we are going to go tomorrow, we are going to Ankara, the foreign minister wants to meet us. Foreign minister was Ahmet Davutoglu. And, you know, great, we go to the foreign ministry, we meet him in this big conference room, and basically, I mean, it's so interesting. What was he telling us? He was saying, you guys, you don't need you, the Greeks, you don't need Europe. You don't need Europe. You don't need Europe. We are together. Let's handle this part of the world together. You know, it is the exceptionalism argument. It didn't resonate with any of us in the room, the Greeks in the room. But it's a very powerful argument. You know, he sort of winked at us and goes, come on, guys. That was sort of the message, right? And we see this happening in practice. I see this happening in practice. And Greece is sort of stuck right now with that strategy, which is a good strategy, but as long as Turkey is willing to stay on track with its accession negotiations. Is it? And my analysis is that it's not. So we're sort of stuck, and therefore more of exceptionalism is bound to come out of that.
If I could just make a little point here and abuse my privilege as chair. This also links into your question about, or your discussion about this issue of rapprochement. Because I don't agree with you 100% that rapprochement has to be institutionalized to be considered rapprochement. There are plenty of examples contemporary world, if not European history, of rapprochement taking place without institutionalization. But nonetheless, if we accept for the time being that the political process that started in 1999 has stalled, and your argument is that because it has not been institutionalized in some respect, it's stalled. One of the reasons for that, of course, is that the institutionalization that should have taken place, or at least was predicted, wasn't going to be a bilateral institutionalization, but was going to be an institutionalization which was based on the premise that Turkey would become a member of the European Union sooner rather than later. And that's, in effect, why, in a sense, the rapprochement has stalled to a certain extent, is because this process hasn't happened. The institutionalization which should have occurred as a result of being members of the European Union together hasn't occurred.
Okay, but it doesn't disprove my thing. It has not occurred, though. So what do we do? And at the point, at this point in time, we are, as I said, if I go back to my previous argument, Turkey seems to be pulling away from the EU. So what do we do? And so we have a strategy predicated on this, which we all support, I think, more or less. But it doesn't seem to be working. So can we come up with something else to keep the process alive, at least bilaterally?
So it remains essentially a political process, and the institutionalization is a byproduct. And so if there isn't a political point of dialogue or a point of discussion, then the process will remain stalled. Okay, let's take another question here, please.
Yes, Kiriako Tsoupras, I'm a Cypriot journalist. Out of two factors, that is history on one hand and current developments on the other, which I think are the most determining ones in the view of the Greek elite vis-à-vis Turkey. I think the most important one is history. And the response to the question of trust perhaps is a proof of that. Mm. But also, the fact that from the Greek side, perhaps the same goes for the Turkish side, but the Greek side, for how long now we haven't had any real initiative for a change, apart from the 99, of course, nothing else, 1099. What is your view on that? Your view on that? Mm-hmm. And another question, are you thinking, are you planning a similar survey to the opposite direction? Turkey vis-à-vis Greece.
Now, to answer your second question, yes, that's what I said. I've just launched a project like that. So with a Turkish colleague, we are now trying to find the elite, identify the elites, the Turkish elites. We've prepared the questionnaire, and we are working with a polling company, and we will be doing this, right? So maybe in a year's time, I might have concrete results about how Turkish elites viewed Greece. Yes, of course, history plays a role. Undoubtedly, the trust is the, and therefore we also know the reluctance on both societies to rethink history. Right? We have historians on both sides that dare challenge, you know, official versions of history and. They are lynched, and whatever they are happens to them. We, you know, whether it's a rewriting or reconsideration of the events of Smyrna or whatever else, we do have this on both sides. But I think nothing is moving also because part of the exceptionalism, at least on the Turkish end, by the way, the big hope on the Turkish end was the current government that has been in power for 12, 13 years at the beginning. It took on, accepted the accession process so that it could change society and make itself mainstream, right, and acceptable to Turkey. But now there seems to be a second part to this government where polarization has become the norm, right? And it's a very divided society. And with polarization comes nationalism, right? Where we have now, the Greeks, for example, the way they are perceived, especially by secular Turks, secular elites, is you always hear the statement which is, oh, I wish you Greeks and you Armenians and you Jews never left, because we would have been a totally different society, right? Fine. And now, why do we feel this? Because now we ourselves feel marginalized as secular elites, right? We tried maybe our revolution, which is called Gezi Park, and look at the result. Nothing really came out of it, right? So we are becoming marginalized. And slowly you see a lot of intellectuals leaving the country too. Small numbers, but it's interesting. But there is a growing nationalism. Let's see the spin that comes out of what happened in Istanbul today. The spin is going to lead to more nationalism. Turkey is under threat, right? And therefore, it needs to be defended. And I will know that tomorrow when I go back and as I'm walking from the home, my apartment, to the supermarket, I will notice more and more flags on the windows, which is an instinct which Greeks would have if something were to happen in that case. But that also... So the polarization in Turkish society proper, which is really a polarization that has been in place for the last 5 or 6 years, and it's growing, and because it's also on the basis of a strategy by the government, by Erdogan, to stay in power, and it has worked for him, right? That has had an impact on anything else, right? And so, we keep the process, these high-level political meetings together. By the way, this is a Turkish strategy with every one of its neighbors. It does this with Russia, it does this with Ukraine, it does with everybody else. But it does not allow, I think, it does not allow for real movement on rethinking of history. Because you see, even the history, you're right. Let's take the EU approach. You know, everything has been predicated on Turkey becoming more European. It's not. But even at a time when the strategy seemed to be working, we never had historians on both sides, at least sanctioned by both sides, to sit down to start rethinking about history. They always come out to be marginals, respected historians that are, as I said, mocked and whatever for their views in their respective countries, for what they might say, you know. And so I think this is how... So there's no movement on this. We saw what happened in Greece. The Minister of Education said something about the Pontic Greeks, whether it was genocide or not. And look at what happened. We cannot even have a proper debate about this in Greece proper, right? And Turkey is not, I think... At the stage right now, the climate is not conducive to have a debate about history. It's a country that feels threatened. It's a country that has serious problems at its borders. And a country where... How many cities are under curfew right now in Turkey? And no one talks about it, right? It's a country that's really divided, right? So if it's divided and you're in Ankara ruling, you have to find a way to keep it together. And I think stressing the national aspect... is part of a logical strategy, right? And therefore, these issues are left. On the other hand, we have the consulate in Istanbul, the Greek consulate, which is very active. I mean, very active. It started off with the previous two consul generals down, who started using Sismanoglio Megaro, which is the residence, the official residence of the consul, to hold classes and cultural events that were not really sanctioned, right? And it's worked because the secular elite of Istanbul felt that this was the old Istanbul coming back, where Greeks and Turks came together, right? But that's a marginalized segment, I think, of society at large. So it's the intellectuals that are willing to talk and debate history and accept wrongs, and we can accept and sit down with them, but it's a very small segment of society.
Mm-hmm. And one more just a general question. A few years ago, a colleague and I did a report on Cypriot perceptions of Turkey, And actually now I've been asked to do a similar, the opposite of the Turkish perceptions of Cyprus. The interesting thing about, well, we actually took the opposite, the complementary approach to yours, which was that rather than doing a survey, we did in-depth interviews with opinion shapers. And we were intending to do a survey, but then we decided that it wasn't really going to be very fruitful because actually we got such fabulous answers from the interviews and in a place like Cyprus, which is so small, it's also very easy to do a fairly wide sample pretty easily, pretty quickly. So I wonder, you know, what you feel you may have missed in doing it this way, rather than doing the interviews that you had wanted to do. What you think the advantage or disadvantage of it might be. One reason I ask this is because, of course, when we were doing the interviews, for example, I was doing interviews with Turkish opinion shapers, and I asked them, you know, to give me one word to describe the relationship with Turkey. And it's very interesting, and then to explain that. And then it's very interesting to see how those answers fell out, which is obviously something that you can't get when you're asking questions that ask them to evaluate, you know, their something on a scale. So I wonder, you know, what you think the advantages and disadvantages of that approach were. And then I say that I'm about to do the opposite of this, and of course the one of the disparities there is that for Cypriots, Turkey is obviously very important, looms large in their thinking, and so on. In Turkey, Cyprus is not very important, right? So and at the moment, especially with everything else that's going on, it's very low on the agenda. It has been for many years. So it's obviously much more difficult to get some kind of symmetry there. And I think Greece is also not an important issue for Turkey. But I wonder to what extent, I would expect that it's not, that Greek-Turkish relations are not as important for Greece right now, are not that high on the agenda, because of the crisis, but probably more important for them for Turkey. So I wonder how you know where you would put Greek-Turkish relations, sort of on the scale of things. In other words, was this an interesting when you presented this to people as a project? Mm-hmm. Did they say, "Oh yes, this is a project that really needs to be done," or we're really interested to see what the results of this were? Or was it because it's so urgent, or no? I mean, when we were doing the project in Cyprus, people were very interested in what we were doing. They really wanted to know what the results were going to be. But I think in Turkey, it's not going to be quite
as. No, to take your second, no. I mean, yes, the Hellenic Observatory approved it, so whoever evaluated our application, but when we are presenting the results, no, not really. In Turkey, yes, there's an interest because, again, the results that have to deal with Greece and Turkey, but no, I never felt an urgency on the part of anybody. And I think this is why we had difficulties with the interviews also. No one really wanted to talk. So, which also means, going to your first part, yes, he would have been so much better had we had interviews, even with the sample. But we decided it was just going to be too complicated, or we would have been able to have interviews, say, from some of the elite categories, and not from others. And that would have sort of, you know, destroyed sort of our sample. But the thing is, on the other hand, I think at times, you know, it depends on what you do with it. I mean, raising awareness. I've made my conclusions about the study, so it's what am I doing about it, you know. So one of the things that I've done now is I found some money from NATO, and in Thessaloniki in December, I held a first, I call it the first, Greek-Turkish youth symposium on security. And where we had an application process, we selected 15 Turks aged between 22 and 35, 15 Greeks aged between 22 and 35, the younger generations, and that have an IR background. And we sat down in Thessaloniki to discuss the issues. And it was very interesting as we were, and the whole premise of the exercise was, these were people that very well educated, know IR, understand much more than the average Greek or Turk, you know, Greece, the other country. And when we sat down to say, what were the obstacles to improving Greek-Turkish relations, and it was sort of the workshop of 4 days, it was a repetition of the same old discourse that keeps coming out, which also showed that there's no new thinking and there's a need for new thinking, right? So I think at the end, no, there was no urgency. I am trying to make it an issue, or my colleague Kostas is trying to make it an issue, right? I convinced my university, again, that let's try to do this survey. Yes, they thought it was a good idea. Well, they've shot down other ideas in the past. So there's really no urgency in that sense. I don't know if that answered your question. But I believe in, you know, our role as individuals in trying to do something about it. I understand your part about Cyprus. I'm starting a new project now, something with the Friedrich Ebert Stiftung. And I call it a quadripartite study of how civil societies can cooperate. So the project is, we look at four areas, civic education, youth, gender, and culture, and arts, and heritage in general. And in each one of these areas, there will be one expert, one core group expert from either Greece, Turkey, a Turkish Cypriot, or Greek Cypriot. And then we will have three meetings in Istanbul, in Athens, and in Nicosia, where we would bring, the agenda is the same, we would bring civil society individuals from those three countries to see whether we can work together on these issues. And so I think that this is a way to spur on things, you know. Maybe no one else has thought about this, but this might be a way of saying, okay, we are dealing with this in our part of the world, or bilaterally, let's see if we can do it at four and eventually at three, right? But this is where I'm just trying to generate the interest to answer your question. Yeah.
Okay, let's just take one last question because we are running out of time. Well, if there's anybody else, there is one last question.
Constantin Bahai, I broadcast in Greece. Just one thing, first-hand experience, there was a small Greek ship owner with his Turkish associate on the island of Inousis. And as they started the second bottle of whiskey, looking at the Turkish lights across the sea, the ship owner, who's died since then, said, took his keys and put them in his hand, in the Turkish associate's hand, and said, when you invade, I want you to have my house. It was a very poignant moment that said a lot of things. But there's just two short questions. What was the Greek for, should Greece trust Turkey? What was the Greek question? And with Davutoglu, I think Davutoglu would have asked many different groups exactly the same question. You and I can sort this thing out together.
Yeah, yeah,
you're
right.
Why didn't you explore it more?
Yeah.
What you actually
I don't remember the Greek. I don't have it yet. I didn't bring the whole
what
thing.
What was the word for trust?
Yeah. Actually, if you look at the Hellenic Observatory website with the studies there, you'll find it because we have annexed the study both in the survey questions, both in English and Greek. You know, there might be, it's so interesting when I talk to a lot of my Turkish friends, there might be a Turkish invasion of sorts of Greece where a lot of my Turkish friends are just thinking of moving. And the first thing they say is, I want to move to a Greek island. Of course, I tell them, have you dealt with the Greek tax authorities? You know, don't even think about moving to a Greek island. But it's the first thing. And many people keep coming up to me now saying, we've sat down, you know, as a family or whatever, and we have some money aside, and we really want to do this. So I don't know if it's actually happening, but I hear more and more people thinking that this might be a place where, again, it's the secular elites, right? It's a particular category of Turks think, and that have keep coming to Mytilene and Samos and Lesbos and wherever else. Yeah, Mytilene and Lesbos are the same island, yeah. and Rhodes and Kos and whatever. And and think that, you know, this would be a nice place where, you know, they could either retire or do something else or get out of Turkey, right? So I don't know. I'll be checking up to see whether this is actually happening.
Davutoğlu,
yes. This was at a time when, you know, his strategy or his theory was effectively being applied. But I think Davutoğlu is, you know, a product of his education and his background, and he has no idea what the European Union is at all. And I think this is how he views relations with all the neighbors, right? There is a big country in the center called Turkey, and, you know, naturally, as a magnet, we'll find a way to work together. Which he could, some people could be convinced by it, right? You have your problems with the Europeans, we have our problems with the Europeans, we understand this area of the world better than the others, let's try to figure it out, right? As a Greek, when you hear this, you get scared. It has to do with the power balance, right? But I think this is his, you know, I think this was exactly the same logic applied to the protocols with Armenia that eventually failed, right? For another set of reasons. And I think that was the logic too. We can go ahead and do the breakthrough because we are well-intentioned as a government to do it.
Okay, we've run out of time. Before I ask you to join me in thanking Dimitris for his presentation, could I just make a promotional announcement? We have two upcoming events in the Hellenic Observatory. On Monday, the 18th of January at 6 p.m., is it in this room, Polly? In this room, we have a seminar entitled From Migration Crisis to Refugee Crisis in Europe, Securitization Priorities as Opposed to Integration Policies by Professor Apostolos Papadopoulos, from the Department of Geography at the Charakopoulos University of Athens. And back to our normal routine in a fortnight on Tuesday, the 26th of January, same time, same place. Young Greeks and Democracy, Social Representations and Imaginaries, and the Impact of the Crisis by Thalia Mayoglu, who's a visiting fellow in the Hellenic Observatory. You're more than welcome to attend those two. And please now join me in thanking Dimitris for this evening's presentation. Thank you very much.
Thank you.